The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Hello, ladies and germs. Welcome to this special edition of Jim Peters at Night in the Hollywood Squares. What are you doing? Oh, God. Okay, so on the screen, to my right, that we are here, that's Larry Newman, that's Don Zorro, and this over here, that's Tim Conaway. And yeah, we're the pooper panel. Yeah, Conaway's got dolls. Okay, all right. You guys know I have an easy laugh. You know that. All right. So first of all, let me put this on the number on the screen really quick here. If you want to join us, you can call in with your can. No, I tell you what. Don't call in with your camera. Just call in with your phone. It's 563-999-3435. Reason is you're gonna get too many people on the damn screen here. So. I'm going to take this off now because it blocks everybody's view, especially Don. We want to see your face. You're the handsome one. So I got to tell you guys. During about 30 minutes into the speech, I got a text from Larry that says, "Why are you making me watch this garbage?"
Yes. Oh,
I feel so ashamed.
Oh yeah.
I haven't paid my fair share.
No, you haven't.
Supported.
You're a bad man, Don.
I'm such a shit. I feel horrible. I'm going to go borrow money so I can send it into the government.
Oh, or get your student loan reprieved, you know. There's that, too. Okay, also, Larry, you texted. What do you think?
It was maddening. You know, I mean, he's trying to say all the right things, and I'm sorry, but I pay attention to people and their actions and know what they say, and it was so much crap, but just, you know, it was sickening to watch.
Tim?
Yeah, well, I will never overcome this. That's why my little friend from outer space, he was just saying, let's get the hell out of here. This wasn't a State of the Union address. It was a political campaign speech. And
yeah,
the networks kindly gave this guy over an hour of free campaign ad time.
Yeah.
You know, if so much of that was bullshit, so much of what he's saying he's going to do for America or, you know, claims that he's done, isn't constitutional. The whole thing with abortion stuff, you know, they didn't declare that women don't have rights. They declared that Congress doesn't have the right to make those kind of laws. They, you know, it's a matter of what in the Constitution, which everything that Biden said ignored constitutional limits and ignored of what the constitutional powers are and aren't. So much of what he talked about is socialist, when all these grand plans, you know, how are they going to get paid for? Well, they get paid for by the taxpayers, telling pharmaceutical companies how much money they can make is that's a socialist, if not communist, kind of control.
Yeah,
that's what China does with their company.
And the it's basically that we're going to solve all your problems.
Oh yeah, well of course that's what I'm saying. It was a campaign speech instead of a State of the Union
yeah.
speech. if you were the CEO of a company and you got up and you talked that kind of nonsense to your board of directors and to your shareholders, the next day you would be out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, none of that is what he's talking about is supported. As I say, most of it's not within his power to do. And, you know, it's socialist activities. Limiting what companies can and can't do is outside the realm of the federal government. It's just, I mean, yeah, like Larry's saying, it's not only crap, it was making someone in this house very angry.
Well, Tim, let me run this by you guys. You guys know I spent most of my life in the music business, and I happened to tell this story a few days ago to another friend under another circumstances. There's a very famous story. Ahmet Erdogan started Atlantic Records in like the 1960s, and by the 70s, they're having a hard time, and he's at a board meeting, and the board is really kind of angry with him, and they're saying, well, so Ahmet, what are you going to do about these deficits? And he stands up and says, next year we're going to have more hits. And everybody's, oh, okay. it's pretty much what Tim's talking about. You know, it's like, yeah, let's pass another bill. It's like, holy shit. Okay, I have to say that
you know a speech is bad when basically any fifth grader on the street could make an argument against everything that he was saying. Tim is absolutely right. This was nothing more than a speech. And this is, you know, this is what happens when you have an incumbent that wants another year. This is why I prefer the second termers, because they have nothing to lose. They just go ahead and go for broke. Or at least that's what I think, that if Trump actually manages to win, that's why I think it'll be four good years, because he'll do what he wants. Not that he doesn't do that anyway, but
yeah.
But he'll really do what he wants without having to worry about what the ramifications are. But then again, we're talking about Donald Trump, so I guess what I just said, it really doesn't matter, because he says what he's going to do anyway. And I love how he purposely avoided using his name, my predecessor and my friends across the aisle. It was really a spectacle. I felt like I was watching the House of Parliament with the usual talkback that goes on that you hear whenever speeches are going on.
I thought they were really reserved.
Yeah.
Marjorie
Taylor Greene, of course.
Right. Well, she can't help herself.
She cannot help herself.
But yes, they really made a concerted effort, obviously, to just let the thing play out. And I think that was probably very, very smart.
Did you notice how long it was before he actually got to the border? And that once he did, and he got the reaction that he knew he was going to get, whatever speech problems he had just suddenly went from about 5 to 10. Could not get a word out. And then he made the cardinal error of actually asking questions to the people that are trying to, you know, shout you down. Because then once you do that, then it's bets are all off.
Then you have a
respond as much as they want.
That's right. You have a conversation at that point, and you don't want it.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Did you guys get the impression? My overall impression is that this over massaged by committee. It was like everything was thrown in there. You know, it's like, you know, there didn't seem to be any meat or soul to it per se. It's like, we're going to hit all the talking points. I don't know.
Well, Tim said it. He said it was a campaign speech.
Yeah.
And this was exactly it. He had been fed a bunch of lines, none of which he knew the actual substance behind, and tried to deliver them, and did so with anger, as he has in the last bunch of public speeches that he made. There's nothing conciliatory about his tone. So it this message of his of togetherness falls on ears that just do not want to accept this line of nonsense.
Yeah. And the thing on the border was absolutely the worst. I mean, everybody knows he can solve it. You know, I mean, we know that, you know.
Right.
Yes.
And so
yes,
he's
right.
just talking. It's like, I don't know. My guess is we all live out in the real world. And also, that's another thing, too. You know, he got this a tremendous ovation when he came in the hall. And I'm thinking, well, no wonder these people are so stilted. I mean, that's what they see. You know, he never talks to any real people. And if he does, it's under really weird circumstances. I don't think this played well in the public. That's my guess. I don't know.
But may I say, I don't want to hog the time.
No. I love it when you hog.
What anybody of any sense had to come away with is Democrats sure look weird.
Yeah.
People that have hair on one side. Women, to people pretending that they're pretending that they are women. Man, you had to come away with saying, I want nothing to do with these.
Oh, Don, that is so... Recent, yeah. My God, you're absolutely right. You're right. Even
well, the applause at the beginning when he's coming down the aisle and everything. I mean, that's just respect for the office, and we would all do that.
Yeah.
You know, but it was just so ridiculous tonight. It was pathetic.
One of the problems, though, is that. He's the president of the United States. He's making what they're calling a State of the Union address. And most American people are going to take that what he said at face value. Most people, you know, haven't done the homework, you know, haven't looked deeper into any of these issues than the headlines and the most, I don't know how many, people in the country actually read newspapers anymore, so people get their news off the internet and off their telephone. And so he's saying, well, I did that, and I did that, and I did that. And, you know, the fact that it isn't true, they're not going to take it any farther than that.
Tim, but, you know, and I want to ask you guys this. So the guests I've been having on the show the last couple months, you know, the political ones, and I kind of asked them, and everyone seems to kind of agree with my feeling that slowly the public is starting to get a clue about this shit. I don't know if it's going to be like in time or enough, you know, for
well, you heard it here first. Remember the Zorroisms about the chinks in the armor,
mm-hmm.
and that there ain't no kind of racist remark, by the way. I'm talking about the way that the veneer, and that's all it is, the veneer of anything that has to do with the Democrats has been cracking, and now it's blistering and starting to fall off.
Yeah.
And you're seeing the statue that's inside of it is just made of styrofoam, the most insubstantial kind of thing that you can imagine.
Yeah. And
he's talking tonight about how well everybody's doing, and does he not realize that everybody goes to the grocery store?
No, he doesn't. I don't think he does.
That everybody puts gas in their car to go to their job. That, you know, we're looking at a border crisis, that invasion that's totally off the wall. And everybody knows he could, with a stroke of a pen, tomorrow. So do they, people are looking at him and going and shaking their head going, no, this is not right. Yeah, we've got 800,000 new jobs, but how many did we lose before we come back and got those new jobs?
Exactly.
Is he counting the people that change jobs?
Yeah.
You know, that's the numbers that the government plays with are just so ridiculous. They can make them say anything that they want them to say. We've got the lowest number of working Americans that we've ever had. 60% of the people, of working people, don't have a job. They're living off the government, and communism is that.
Yeah. Don?
That was one of the big lies, you know, and that was early on. But, you know, I talked about 15 million new jobs. Well, no, there are 15 million jobs that people return to after the forced closures of the pandemic. After the government shut everybody down, people who lost their jobs or were laid off, That's the 15 million jobs that went back. So those aren't new jobs.
That's
and
right.
800,000
right.
new jobs,
right.
Again, is part of that factor. He also talked about the, you know, he mentioned that the inflation was at 9% and now it's at 3%. And he talked about the lowest unemployment rate. Again, lying with that number because they only count the people who are on the unemployment rolls at this time, not the people who have fallen off the unemployment rolls
right.
and still don't have a job. So, yeah, okay. all of those things were lies.
Here's an anecdote for you. I went out for breakfast with a friend the other day. The subtotal of the bill was $40. You know how much I wound up paying before tip? Before I tipped, $47.
Yeah, exactly.
Before the tip, this is all taxes and fees and all this crap. A $40 subtotal came out to $47 after I looked at it, and then you had the tip on top of that. So I just tipped on the 40. But I'm just saying, him and his nonsense about inflation being under control, he's out of his mind. There's also the recent story about people trying to buy a, what is it, like a bacon burger, fries and soda over at Five Guys,
and having
a burger, fries and a soda, $24.
Well, guys, I don't know about you. I'm a pretty big fan of fast food. I at least in the past, I've eaten at like McDonald's and Wendy's 2-3 times a week. And there's just no question, especially McDonald's, the prices have gone through the roof. I mean,
we're paying for the new $20 an hour thing for
teenagers
for burning fries.
Yeah.
And that's the other part of the lie. Well, people are people are doing better now and, you know, prices have come down. Well, no, prices are up. And here's something that he talked about us dear old seniors, but, here's part of the...
I think he froze.
The fact that you can't make better through politics. The baby boomers have left the workforce by and large. There's still, another... 8 or 10 years worth of baby boomers out there, but have left it. And the generation after the baby boomers is only about 60 some or close to 70% in terms of the number of people. So because there are these fewer people out there, and because current parents have raised a generation of kids who don't want to work anyplace because it hurts their feelings, that everybody had to raise what they pay. I mean, his base rates of $15 and $16 to work the drive-through window at a McDonald's. And so, people are making more money, but everything costs more because people are making more money. The minimum
All right.
wage doubled over, a period of about 6 or 7 years. It was just another lie in the thing. And it doesn't address the real problem is that what if we get all this new development and all these new factories and all this other new stuff?
Oh, that's the government, Tim, but the government did all that.
Yeah, the government said that they're doing that. They're creating all these jobs and the private sector is rallying around
yeah.
and they're going to do all this.
They created
stuff,
them, all of them, right.
Which, when you look at the reality of it happening, there's a lot of talk, but there's very little action. But when they do open all these places, they got nobody to work for.
Do I have to point out the fact that not every job is supposed to be a living wage? It just, do I need to point that out? You know, your 16-year-old kids used to work at fast food, The idea was you made a few extra bucks, you learn how to work. That was
the
idea.
You gotta work, you learn how to deal with the public.
Yeah, you weren't supposed to get paid $25 an hour. That was not the idea. And so what's wrong with that? I don't know.
Well, they don't even know how to deal with the public anymore.
No.
So, I prefer having these folks that are retired and decide to go work at McDonald's because they just want something to do. And it's always so much more pleasant dealing with them than it is with your typical teenager who just goes.
But Don, that's kind of that. Yeah. That's a scary idea, isn't it? I mean,
well,
you know,
it's been scaring me for quite a while.
Well, we're talking about fast food costing $24 for a burger and fries. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, does anyone think that when you impose a higher requirement on a higher price requirement on a business, that they're not going to pass it on to the consumer?
No, you,
they
you
have been.
To.
Exactly.
And anybody taking economics 101 should know that. It's
that's
like,
correct.
You know?
He either lied about it or you're stupid enough not to know.
I'm starting to think, well, I said this before, people, you can argue about it, senile, maybe, maybe not. I don't think that's the problem. He's delusional. I think that he actually thinks he's done all this shit, you know?
Well, you know, he talked about his career at, you know, the age of 26 or 29 or whatever he said when he went into the U.S. Senate, and he's never done anything else. He's never worked a day in his life.
No, yeah.
He's never produced anything.
He went to law school and... That was it.
Right.
And, you know, he almost failed out of law school, but, you know, thankfully he had people he could plagiarize that to get through that. So, but, you know, if we had told those kind of lies in Catholic school, this is what we
Oh, my God. What are you doing?
I think there's a family resemblance.
God Almighty.
100% of the nuns I had. She also, if I wind her up and let her leave,
what does she do then?
She comes at you spitting.
I don't want to know. Don't tell me.
Did anybody notice the time that Kamala stood up the fastest? It had to do with the marijuana laws. Before that, man, I thought that girl had a spring up her butt.
She has a spring up her butt.
She's awfully enthusiastic about that particular law.
Okay, you know, am I an old perv? But I'm sitting here thinking, I'm looking at everything. You know, she's actually pretty damn cute. Like, you know, she may be dumb as a rock, but
you're talking about Johnson?
She's dumb as a rock. That's
no, I'm talking about Kamala. She's dumb as a rock, but she's pretty damn cute. I mean, I see what was his name?
Willie Johnson, Willie, whatever his name is, the guy who she was stopping.
Yeah, that's right. What was his name? Willie, oh, God.
Was it Brown?
Willie Macon.
Brown, Willie Brown. That's right, it's Willie Brown, right, yeah. That started her career. She's, you know, so I don't know. What do I know?
You know, she was like a little monkey on a spring that...
Do you have a doll for that too?
The speech was so jive that really I was just enjoying kind of watching how they were working the camera and at what times they would focus on who, and he had just finished talking about the Native Americans, and who did the camera go to?
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren. That's right. I know. Is that somebody's cruel joke?
I think this was totally somebody back there is a Republican.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's because the mainstream media still thinks she's really an Indian.
I don't know if they think he is or not, because if you watch them, they really aren't believing what they're saying. But this is the line that they have to toe to keep their jobs on the mainstream media.
Well,
if they don't,
yeah,
they're out the door.
Yeah.
And they don't believe it either. They're
right.
Smarter than that.
Yeah, there was, I mean, it's very simple. And somebody, I can't remember, was I watching Bill O'Reilly the night or something, who said that this is very simple. You're invited to go on MSNBC. You know what they want to say. If you don't say that, you never ask back. And then you're out another $1,000, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, so.
And what was that one moment where he... I don't even know if he understood what he was saying. When he was talking to the people in the Supreme Court about the women's issues, it's like he was talking to them. First of all, I thought it was kind of a threatening manner, number one. Number two, they are not subject to the will of the American voter.
Right.
Which is what he was implying.
Right.
I mean, it's like, you people, you know, you better beware here.
Yeah.
Excuse me. That horse left the barn a long time ago. This guy's a real idiot.
Yes, he is.
He, and I say that without trying to be funny.
I know.
He's literally an idiot.
Yeah. And also, maybe this is, you know, a hallmark of idiots. He does not know it either. You
well,
know?
That's the best part of being an idiot.
It is part of being an idiot, isn't it? Yeah.
But, threatening the Supreme Court, you know, women have a lot of political and elective power. And it's like, well, these people, I guess the undercurrent of that was supposed to be, well, you know, when I get voted into office, I'm going to, you know, when you guys retire, I'm going to replace you with somebody else. But, challenging those people and, again, not understanding that the decision he was talking about, the overturning Roe versus Wade, was a constitutional issue for which they had a sound constitutional basis and not a political or elective issue.
Correct.
And then just saying, oh, we're going to do that. Congress is going to make this. It's like you totally missed the point because they already said it's not constitutional for you, Congress, to deal with this stuff.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, he's also kind of a bully and that kind of threat.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to
for
do
sure.
This.
He looked right at the Supremes and bragged about how he went around them with the reimbursement for the school loan.
Yeah.
You know,
and he's trying to sell that as a feature. He said, "I saved firefighters money and all sorts of stuff." Yeah, what about all the people that paid their loans back? And what about me paying for all the loans? It's like it's bullshit.
And he's wanting money. He's wanting our money to pay teachers more. When we have the lowest proficiency scores in American history, okay? Kids come out of graduating from schools and are scoring zero on reading and math.
Yeah, right.
Now, why does he want to pay teachers more when they can't teach one kid?
Yeah, because apparently, Go ahead, Tim.
And again, the Constitution doesn't give Congress any authority
to do that,
to make legislation regarding education.
That's right. Absolutely. I know. He wants to do all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
And then he says, you know, I thought he said something that he taught the Second Amendment for 12 years.
He actually did say that. I don't understand where or what.
And, you know, none of these restrictions impinge on the Second Amendment. That's just like everything that you're talking about impinges on the Second Amendment.
Has he read the Second Amendment?
I don't know.
The right to and bear arms
shall not be infringed.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And so, but it's all this, you know, we're going to save people from these gun problems. Well, you know what? You can't. You can call a rifle an assault rifle, even though that's not an actual designation. All firearms can be assault weapons. And if you let that stand, if you say, oh, it's classified as an assault weapon, then you can classify any weapon that, you know. Not
right. I'm no gun expert. I don't know anything about this, but what are you defining as an assault weapon? No one can define it. Not only that, seriously, how are you going to keep crazy people from going out and shoot people? It's like,
well, I think we've seen that you can't. I mean, look at
that's
the city
right.
of Burnsville, for God's
order.
Sake. And I read a horrifying statistic about the number of officers that we've lost in a calendar year. And I think it's like at 60, which represents a jump in percentages that's in the hundreds. This is like, you know, this is a war on police officers, but like we have never to use the Trump line, the likes of which we've never seen.
Larry knows about this full hand.
I deal with this every day, guys,
yeah.
And it's law and order. Okay, if you break the law, then there is punishment for that. That's the way the statutes are written. That's the way every state in the union, their laws say, if this is the rule, if you break the rule, you're going to prison for 5 years. Nobody goes to prison anymore. They don't even get charged with it. So why are we surprised that violence is up?
And Larry,
something that he said, too, was violence is down, murder rates are down. I don't know what he's talking about because, you know, Chicago, Minneapolis, New York City, Washington, D.C., I think the rates are down a little bit there, mainly because I think a lot of people are moving out of there. Crime isn't down, it's up, and the rate of recidivism is at the highest that it's ever been. That is, people who were in jail or should be in jail committing crimes again.
Well, you have to understand the crime statistics. Okay, when you commit a crime and that crime is not investigated by the police officers, if there's not a report written, if there is not a prosecution by a prosecutor, if they refuse to prosecute you for that crime, then that statistic is no longer included in the numbers. Mm-hmm. So the more crimes that get sloughed off to the side by prosecutors, and I know, of course, I work with them all the time. I know tons of police officers, and they're going, well, the prosecutor's never going to prosecute this, so I'm not even going to write a report.
Right.
Okay, those numbers aren't there. So you've got the dramatic rise in crime that we know about. Then you temper that with the number of crimes that aren't reported. I mean, the amount of crime increase is tremendous.
So I always want to point out here, well, Larry, this is a kernel of truth the public needs to know, and that's why people watch the show. You were saying that the reason crime is going down is because these crimes are not being recorded and prosecuted. So therefore, it's a double whammy.
Crime is going up at a lesser rate
than
what has actually been reported.
Oh, man.
Well, what is reported is going up at a lesser rate. But in fact, it's going up at a higher rate.
Do they count?
Here in Minneapolis, Larry, so we had at a high, we had, I think it was 800 officers on the beat in Minneapolis. We're now down to 500 and change. I think it's 542, something like that. The other thing that is not getting reported is, you know what country is experiencing a downward trend in violent crime? Venezuela. Do you know why that is?
They're sending their criminals
here.
Sure. Right.
So we're dealing with things like this.
Right. We're getting to Venezuela. We're getting the criminals from all these other countries. But the citizen committed crime are increasing at a fast rate because there's no prosecution.
Right.
There's no penalty.
Right.
There's no accountability. I deal with that every day.
So, Larry.
Go ahead.
Don Zorro's point, we've got a prosecutor who voted in the last time around. He's one of those people who's doesn't want to put anybody in jail. And we've had some very violent crimes, including one guy who has been charged with attacking police officers who was out on the street with this free release kind of stuff that they do and attacked police officers. And this happened three times. And
sure.
Still, they're not putting the guy in. So that's the problem, and it's understandable that officers don't want to work in the city of Minneapolis because, the justice system has these layers like, we saw on TV for 20-some years, and it's got to be, everybody's got to have the other guy's back. If the district attorney is not going to prosecute, then you've lost your support from that. You might have support from your police chief down, but you don't have support in that next tier. And so,
without judges and prosecutors, you have no criminal justice system.
And then why would anybody sign up to be a police officer,
Yeah, and that's the problem. I mean, your police officers are going out and trying to do the right thing, but their hands are tied because all they do is send the report into the prosecutor and there goes to die. Now, if it does go to trial, and I'm talking from firsthand experience in the courts every day, the judges want to, as the statutes require, but in Missouri, all of the Supreme Court justices in Missouri are all Democrats in a heavily Republican state. And the Missouri Supreme Court justices set the rules that judges have to follow. And so the Supreme Court is issuing orders to the local judges telling them that you have to be lenient, you have to let them go, you have to, you know, do not send them to prison, turn them back out on the street. And the judges, local judges, throw up their hands and say, there's nothing I can do about it. Because if they don't follow those rules, then they can be kicked out off the bench, lose their retirement and everything else. So it comes down from the top. It's not police officers that's a problem.
Yeah, but gentlemen, how did we get to the point? Okay, we've had 2,000 years of civilization here, basically, and we've basically refined this and based it on what Larry's saying about the fact that, you know, basically arresting people de-incentivizes people committing crime. So where, after 2,000 years of getting this, basically perfecting this system, all of a sudden these Democrats come and say, no, we're going to do this differently. We can do this better. Why did they get the, where does these stupid ideas come from?
You're describing exactly how socialism began. Socialism began at the hands of intellectuals who said, we've got a better way.
Yeah.
And we've got a way, a better way because of blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And people just sat there letting their eyes glaze over. And the person said, follow me. They followed him. So now what you've got is people saying, no. Build more jails. Build more prisons. We can get to the root of the problem by not getting to the root of the problem, by throwing money at it. We're not going to do the real deep dive of saving young people from the very get-go. We're going to create programs that make it look as though we're doing that. We're going to create as many programs to put icing on the cake and never get to the freaking cake and really digest what needs to be digested here. This is the part, and this is part and parcel of everything that the Democrats and these socialists and these leftists do. They color everything with their pseudo-intellectualism, and they ruin societies with overthinking every simple problem. And I know this because I'm currently binge-watching Little House on the Prairie. And I can see the way America used to be, and I'm going, damn, this is the way we need to be. So, Laura Ingalls, you were right, honey.
Yes, and that is the reason I keep you guys around, that speech right there. Thank you, Mr. Zorro.
If you've been to the jails, if you've been to the prisons, the status of the prisons and jails right now is those people that are housed there have tremendous rights. The attorneys and the legal profession have sued and sued and sued until to the point to where you go to prison. Hey, you just... You know, it's, you can watch TV, play cards, learn from the other criminals, and you don't have to work, turn the tap. It's cruel and unusual punishment if you ask them if they want to go out and clean up the road ditch. Okay, that's where we're at, you know. Now we go back to, now we turn that around and we go to this drug problem, the problem with prescriptions, okay? We're going to get the prescriptions down. No, you're not, because the major cost of prescription is the product liability insurance that these companies have to pay every time they create a prescription or medication, and the cost of the litigation that comes with every one of those is the what's driving it up. You go across the border to Canada, and it's a lot cheaper. Wonder why?
Yeah.
Because they don't have the litigation. They don't have the product liability expense that we have here, because everybody sues everybody.
And also, still, Larry, know, they don't, you know, they don't make as many drugs either.
Damage, you sue for $1 million.
They don't make as many drugs. There's that too. That they also don't do that in Canada. You know,
yeah.
I mean, the amazing thing about the American system is that you can be a drug company and you can put on a new drug and you can get sued to the hilt and still make a profit. That's the real, it's astonishing, but that's really true. I mean,
if you started a company and you made a product You want to make a little bit of a profit.
No shit.
Okay, but you have to include not just the cost to manufacture the product.
Right.
You've got all these other costs, this product
yeah.
liability insurance, the lawsuits, the legal nightmare that you have to go through just to get it on the street.
Not to mention
that's
just
a major part of the cost.
Just the development of drugs. I have a friend of mine who worked in pharmaceuticals at 3M, and he said it was not at all unusual. They would spend $100 million on some drug, and they had to can it because they came to the conclusion it didn't work. You know, he said
yeah.
that was a regular occurrence.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know?
And that, yeah, that's a typical part of it. And what Larry is saying is that, you know, every expense that a company has, you have to account for that, you know, maintenance, repair, and overhead, your real estate, your all those kind of things, the portions to each product that you have and everything that you know, you're doing. So it doesn't matter if you've got $8 worth of raw materials and it takes a guy making $25 an hour 10 minutes to make it, and so you factor that in and say, well, that only costs $12. No, it's all these other things, every other expense in the corporation, and the R&D that you're talking about, $100 million. I mean, some of these people spend $1 billion and 10 or 12 years trying to get something,
put
through.
Right.
You've got to recover that.
Let's bring it down to something that people can really associate with. When you have, let's say you drive a nice car, you got something wrong with it. You bring it in and you look at the bill. What is the majority of the bill? It ain't the parts.
That's
it's
right.
the labor. And
yeah.
this is kind of a microcosm version of what Tim's talking about. It's never as simple as people think that it is, but the Democrats do everything they can to bring people on board by dumbing it down to a point where the people that they have failed to educate because they're in charge of the education system can understand it.
Dan, well, and we were talking earlier, but, you know, where does this come from? Somebody asked all the tear down of the judicial system and the justice system. It's, I point to George Soros. As one of the main factors in here. When you get enough of this kind of stuff going on in a country, you get a lot of disorder. When people are afraid to go out, when there are criminals running the streets and doing whatever you want to do, and that gives rise to the kind of thing that, you know, Germany was in a state of terrible disorder in the 20s and in the 30s, the Social Democrats used all of that as their ticket to build up the situation that they had. And, you know, Soros was groomed by the Nazis. He worked as a teenager. He worked for the Nazis in his village, pointing out the Jews and anybody else that he could. And what happened? He got a piece of, you know, whatever they confiscated from these people after he turned them in. So, you know, he sees now that the way to bring that kind of thing to this country is to create this basic disorder. To knock, you know, there was no law and order in Germany in the 20s, basically. It was wide open, wild, and also everybody was poor because when you can wreck the economy, when you run all the businesses out of town, basically because of all the theft and people being afraid to walk down the street, then you've got the kind of disorder where now you can come in and all of these unconstitutional measures that Biden was bragging about doing, all of these things that he's going to fix by, you know, writing this thing or having his department declare this thing or the other thing, you know, all of these things that are outside his power, they get to do all those things. And we get another 4 years of Biden. And, you know, his Democrats in there, then it is going to totally wreck everything. Now, I'm not saying, and you guys know I'm not a Trump fan either. I think Trump can mess up things in his own way because he's going to come in and be vindictive, self-serving. He's going to get even. And yeah, like Don Soro said, he's in second term. He doesn't have to, he's not running for re-election, so he can do any damn thing he wants. And in his case, it's first of all, it's going to be self-serving, and secondly, it's not going to necessarily be well thought out. But definitely with Biden, another 4 years of this kind of stuff, and him, you know, saying to the Supreme Court, I don't care what you guys say, I'm going to go ahead and do these things that you told me are unconstitutional. You know, that's, I just think it's going to be total chaos by 2026.
Tim, you brought up a really good point here, because people in the press have been writing about this too, about the fact that in 2020, a lot of people, you know, I'm still a freaking conspiracy theorist, so I still think maybe they cheated the election. But even regardless of that, in 2020, the vast majority of people didn't vote for Biden. They voted against Trump. And now that seems to have switched. There's a lot of people who are voting for, they're not voting for Trump. They're voting against Biden, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is the perfect time for a candidate who could appeal to the broad center of the American public to bring stability, to reduce the size and power of federal government, to not say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, when it's clearly unconstitutional, to not look at the Supreme Court and threaten them for making constitutional decisions, to take an approach that is not based on politics, not because of any political connections or because of a political party, you know, bringing in the money, somebody who could do that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, one of those people didn't have any money to really make a...
That would be you? I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
I know. It's sad.
Well, then I have the next best thing. I have the next best thing. So I've narrowed it down to two candidates for vice president that will help kind of mellow the ticket out. Not Nikki Haley, no. Not DeSantis, only not because I don't think he'd be good, but I think that he doesn't need Florida. Why do I get the governor of Florida? Now,
yeah.
You know, you just don't need him.
Right.
Either going to be Tim Scott, and not so much because of South Carolina, because he's got the South, but because the black vote, which is already, we're closing in on 25% of blacks that are going to vote for Trump. And he could expand that to maybe 30% if you get Tim Scott. And Tim Scott also brings you in the evangelicals because of his very tough stand on Roe v. Wade. But the second one that I think is the most intriguing one that I'm thinking of is Tulsi Gabbard. Now, I will admit, I think she's a hottie, and I just want her in the White House because I want a hot vice president.
You want her in the Lincoln bedroom. That's where you want her.
Yes. Then I will pay money to get into the Lincoln bedroom. So with Tulsi, you do get a middle of people that might make a big tipping point for Trump. And he's already... Even if he doesn't take Scott, he's already still got about 23-24% of the blacks.
Yeah.
He's got a higher percentage of Latinos that are going to vote for him. And then he'd also have a certain number of women that would just go, oh, look, a woman, I'm going to vote for her, that kind of thing. So those are my two vice presidential picks.
Okay, Don I'm interested in someone here, and you guys. So I've said this before. The thing I find about Tulsi Gabbard, I mean, besides the fact, you know, it's not just that she's hot. There's just a certain thing about her. I can't really describe it. She's like an earth
she's
mother.
Hot.
I mean, it's like, yeah, she's hot. Okay, fine. All right. But besides that, even though, like, when it comes to actual policies, I have a lot of disagreements with her. The reason I like this woman, and the reason I think so many other conservatives do, is because you get the impression of, the distinct impression of, if push came to shove, she'd make the right decision in the moment. She seems like she's just grounded in reality. That's the same reason I like also kind of Bobby Kennedy too, even though I don't agree with a lot of stuff his policy positions either. You just get the impression these people are like, and especially with Tulsi, with her experience in the military, and she's, you know, really anti-war, you know, and for damn good reason. She's been there. So it's like, you know, you just get the impression she'd do the right thing at the right time, you know? I would have no trouble with her being president at all. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think whoever he picks is in the back of his mind, and maybe in the front of his mind, that the person he picks is going to have to be someone who can step up and be president in 4 years. He's going to pick the person that can do that, that can win and can continue what he wants to do.
Right.
I disagree with Tim a little bit on the fact that it's that he's coming in just to get back at everybody. I think his focus is on getting this country straightened back out. Wouldn't surprise me if he just shuts down the DOJ and rebuilds it, because we know how corrupt it is. But he doesn't have to worry about getting reelected. He's going to come in and clean house. And I think that is why they are so scared of him and are doing everything they can to shut him down, because they know he's going to tear down their playhouse.
Yeah, the swamp is really legitimately concerned. But I do have to point out, Larry, you should be wary of Tim, because he has way more dolls than you do.
My grandkids take all mine.
Well, once again, you know, we're in that sad situation where we're stuck with one or the other of these in the two major parties. We don't really have an open election kind of situation. The two parties have a stranglehold on it, and you know, we don't have anybody else. And as for Tim Scott, Tulsi Gabbard, yeah, I think she's kind of level-headed and a little bit different than the standard politician. Tim Scott, I think, is a weakling, and therefore I think maybe the leading candidate for vice president, because he's not challenging. And traditionally, presidents don't pick somebody for that second office who's a challenging figure to them. You know, look back to American history and see that. So,
well, if I was going to suggest somebody to him, I think I would go with DeSantis, because he is a strong personality. He has got his head on right. He's doing the right thing, and he could carry on what Trump is going to do in 4 years. He could carry that on into the next presidency and keep this country on track.
That should be the consideration, because it's not 4 years, it's 12 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And also, I mean, he has a demonstrated ability to deal with the bureaucracy, which is the biggest single variable any president has.
Well, he's probably the most successful governor there is in the country.
Yes. Right. Right. And I brought this up previously. I mean, on paper, Jimmy Carter was like a perfect presidential candidate. Guy was a small businessman. He was a nuclear physicist. He was in the military. He was governor of a state. He'd already had he had everything on paper going for making him a good president. It didn't work out. You can never predict how these things are going to go. With DeSantis, you kind of have the closest you can get to real proof of the fact that he can do the job, you know?
Correct.
So, yeah, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen. Oh, okay. So I'm going to throw this out in passing. I want all of you to answer this. Is Biden going to be the nominee?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
It's already decided. I mean, you know, the way these parties operate, it's basically you win the primaries and you get nominated in the states that still hold caucuses. That's it.
Yeah.
There's not going to be anything else. They go to the convention and, you know, the only way, if they've got enough votes to pass on the first ballot at the convention.
The only way
it would be somebody else is if that didn't happen, but it's already decided.
The reason I asked, though, Tim, I'm watching Tommy Lahren's show last night, and please no jokes about why I watch Tommy Lahren. I understand that totally well.
But, he's hot.
yes, Don. Yes, she is.
The political qualification. The women in office.
Anyway, So, you know, and she's also, I'm actually really amazed by this woman because she's basically, I know you guys know her history. She's 35 years old. She's basically like a child prodigy talk show host. She's really good at it, but she has Will Cain on, and they're talking about the fact that she thinks that he is not going to be, that they will dump him at the last minute. But I don't see how they could do that, to Tim's point. I don't see what mechanism they could use or, you know.
No, the bottom line is that they got nobody else. They got nobody else.
Well, she thinks they have Newsom.
The only person they're talking about is Michelle Obama, and he would be a terrible president.
Also, and just to clarify, you know, yesterday this did not really make the news because of Super Tuesday, but yesterday she came on and said in no uncertain terms, is she going to do it?
Yeah.
So she's out.
No way. No
yeah,
way Jose.
Right, right.
Well, Tommy Lahren, I will say this about Tommy Lahren. Sharon and I met her and talked to her for a while a few years ago, and very smart, intelligent.
She is, yes.
Earth,
right.
You know, person,
I know.
Common sense. She's an outstanding person when you meet her.
Yeah, no, she is. I know. We can sit here and make jokes about her looks, and that's fine, but you're right. She's really smart and really talented. I mean,
that's another reason, by the way, to get Tulsi Gabbard. She's Samoan, and what was the only place that she
That's true. That's
Samoan.
Right. That's right. That's right. He lost Samoa. That's right. Put it to her. And also, finally, Don, we have to mention the fact that if anybody's going to get arrested in this crew, you've busted multitude of women's hearts, and you should be in jail for that. You know, it's like
I wear them like trophies.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
Hey, gentlemen, I want to thank you for this. It's been a lot of fun. It always is. It always is. And
before we go, I have to tell you about a very quick experience I had. I went into a bar and I actually saw this. I was just sitting having a beer, and in comes this pirate. A pirate comes in, he's got the parrot, the whole thing. And
yeah.
He sits down and he orders a whiskey from the bartender. Give me a whiskey. And the bartender looks down and he notices this guy has a steering wheel coming out from his crotch.
A what?
What? A steering wheel.
Steering wheel. Okay. All right.
He says, what's with the steering wheel? And the pirate says, "Arr, it drives me nuts."
Oh, God. All right. So those of you watching, you don't get this
hey,
Fox News, do you?
He ordered rum. He didn't order whiskey.
You're right.
God. Oh, God. Oh, my God. Okay, Tim, put one of your dolls on the screen for one more time.
Well, let's see.
What do you got?
This is my, you see, I'm backwards.
Okay.
This is what my future is now that I've dropped out of the way.
Yeah.
And look at the size of that lumper.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, we're just amusing ourselves, ladies and germs. That's all we're doing.
Better than abusing ourselves.
That's right. That's right. Don Zurl, thank you. Larry Newman, thank you. Tim Conaway, thank you. I'm going to make a real quick announcement. We're all going to leave together here. Monday, the 11th, and Michael Harrison, the founder of Talkers Magazine, he's going to be here. Tuesday, I got Jennifer Oliver O'Connell. And Wednesday, it's the dynamic duo of Jeff Meyer Wednesday, I got somebody else. No, that's right. Sorry. Well, whatever. Michael Harrison on Monday. So that's what's going on. All right. So do you like you think I know what I'm doing? I don't know what I'm doing. Thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to give a good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to all of you, wherever you are. Thanks. We'll see you guys. And now I'm supposed to run the video, and I kind of screwed it up. Oh, my God. Here we go.